Yes.
There are two short questions, but they are interrelated, so I will ask them both.
Mm-hmm.
What can we reply or respond to someone who says that, yes, I'm deluded, but I like it, and I'm okay with that? What shall we respond?
That's fine.
And the second question is, what one shall do if...
Someone says, ignorance is bliss. What are you going to tell them? It's not? They're saying, you know, what does it say? It is folly to be wise where ignorance is bliss. Right? Another maybe Chanakya saying, or Vedic aphorism, Upadesho hi murkanam prakopayana shantiye. Upadesh means instruction, saying, if you give good instruction to a fool, the end result will be, he'll be angry. And what does Krishna say in the Bhagavad Gita? That line Prabhupada rendered as, let not the wise disrupt the minds of the ignorant. Right? So there's three examples. Someone, it's mentioned in Gita, again, Krishna, Chatur vidha bhajante mam jana sukritin orjana. He's telling Arjuna, chatur vidha, four types of people who make their approach, who begin some sort of theistic spiritual culture in earnest. The qualifier there is jana sukriti, sukriti jan. Their sukriti has, because he's not saying anyone under these circumstances will naturally do this. No. Even if it would appear to make sense, no. Because it's not just about doing something sensible or rational. He's saying, but whose sukriti has reached a particular level of accumulation, they, under these circumstances, will have the tendency to approach him. So that's very interesting. And one of the great things about the Krishna consciousness movement is gifting sukriti to others who could otherwise not appreciate or find this as something meaningful in their lives, or but with the accumulation of sukriti, suddenly what previously was not of importance has a sudden relevancy. It's suddenly relevant in their lives. I always like one line in the Prabhupada purport. Maybe it's in the fourth chapter, around the Tadvidhi Pranipatena sloka, about approaching Gyaninas Tattvadarshina. But it, Prabhupada says something, and I'm paraphrasing, but he says, when one realizes that material life, he says, is a constant source of perplexity, but I add to that as a sidebar, or, you know, a never-ending series of humiliations. Maybe that's just based on my own experience. Sounds nice, you know, a constant source of perplexity. It has a certain dignity to it. I'm perplexed. That sounds so noble, right, that one is perplexed, isn't one. But a never-ending series of humiliation, beginning with birth. But he's saying it behooves such a person to approach a spiritual master, guru. Then in the Bhagavad, tasmad gurum prapadyeta jigyasu shreya uttamam. Shabde Pare Chanishnaktam Brahmanupasamashrayam. That person who's not distracted by substitutes for spiritual substance. It's easy to say these things, but when we're living in the world, karmic reaction in full swing, impending karmic reactions in all varieties of stages, and then what this be, and we're making real-time decisions that have will generate more karmic response. In the midst of that, someone once said about art, said, you know, a type of concentration in the midst of so much distraction. The spiritual pursuit is similar often. To be focused spiritually in the midst of so much distraction. But, so to tie this to the first part, we can say, from one point of view, that if that person has not achieved a certain level of sukriti, they may not value what you have, your suggestion. But then we'll say, well, what, is there some kind of a sukriti meter where you can, you know, or an app, the sukriti app, you hold up your iPhone in front of that person, press the sukriti app, and, you know, it goes up on the meter, you know, it says, make suggestion, make spiritual suggestion. It's not like that. So Prabhupada repeatedly used this phrase, submissive oral reception. It's very simple, but profound. Submissive oral reception. Saying without this, there won't be a spiritual transaction. If someone is in a challenging or dismissive mode, that does not qualify for submissive oral reception, or just out of some curiosity. No. So, when I told Guru Maharaj that I was reflecting back upon my initial, you know, participation in the Krishna Consciousness Movement in ISKCON in San Francisco in 1971, and within a month of joining, Prabhupada was there for Rath Yatra, and that temple, being in San Francisco and that being on the ocean, Prabhupada liked to give names for local centers. Like in Hawaii, where they have so many islands, called New Navadweep, like nine islands, and different names. And San Francisco, he called New Jagannath Puri, because in the days when the devotees were still calling him Swamiji, they're thinking, they see some things Prabhupada might like, they bring them back. Just like our Siddhanti Maharaj, who was previously Chidananda Prabhu. He's such a sweet, simple-hearted person. He told me once, I mean, people can present very dramatic portrayals of how they made their initial approach or how they saw the guru, and that's, it's well and good. But what charmed me about him and what was unique to him is he said, when he saw Prabhupada, he said, he looks like he could use some help. So he offered the help. Right away, he's serving. He didn't make a big deal out of, you know, on some like sort of spiritual analysis. Or he said he looked like he needed some help. He could use some help. And I had a car. I volunteered to drive him around, you know, and shopping, go on a morning walk at Swan Lake and Golden Gate Park, and like talk about the accumulation of Sukriti. And so what I was saying to Guru Maharaj was reflecting back, I thought, so the temple I joined, oh, the devotees who thought they'd found something Prabhupada liked, they come back from shopping, a place called Pier 1 Imports. And they showed Prabhupada these deities they found in the store. And Prabhupada like gives a shastanga dandavat and goes, Jagannatha Shami Nayana Patagami Baba Tume. They bought some Jagannath deities in the store. They thought he might like them. Then Prabhupada introduces the annual Rath Yatra festival, and the San Francisco temple is designated New Jagannath Puri. But so having joined there, those were our temple deities. We had these big Jagannath deities and little Radha Krishna deities. And within a month, Prabhupada was there, and we were celebrating the Rath Yatra with three major size carts and authentic, very true to the original, and Prabhupada riding on Subhadra's cart as he liked to do, and the kirtan. And so I was just saying to Guru Maharaj that how could we appreciate these things? We knew nothing. But in my case, I had read the books, many of what was available, Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, first canto, Bhagavatam, third volume, Krishna book, Isha Upanishad, some other books. I'd read them many times or several times. But still, these things that you had no reference point for were being introduced into your life, and somehow we were resonating with them. You know, it was a positive resonance in our hearts. Prabhupada, one of the first lectures I ever heard him give in person, he's quoting Srinivasa Acharya's Shad Goswami Astakam, the Tyaktva Turnamashesha Mandala Pati Srinim Sadatuchabhat Bhutva Dina Ganeshako Kurunaya Kopina Kantasvito Gopi Bhava Rasamrita Dilahari Kalola Magnu Muhur Bande Rupa Sanatano Raguyago Sri Jiva Gopalako. And we liked hearing this. I remember this in the World Club land where we used to be, and some Thai lady yoga teacher came one night to the class, you know. And she stayed for the whole thing. It had some of her friends like smiling, you know, and I was just curious and asked her afterwards, like, what part did you like, you know, the best? And she said, the Sanskrit. So I thought, oh, the part you couldn't understand. I mean, I'm teasing a little bit, but not too much. But she understood, oh, that's that vibration we hear from the monks and the temples. We hear it on the holy days. And in the morning, you hear the Sanskrit mantras. The man who built this place where we are was a Sanskrit scholar from the University of Berkeley, Cal Berkeley, in California. And he wanted this to be a Sanskrit school. And he was very particular about the vibration of Sanskrit. And in fact, he had some correspondence with Prabhupada many years ago, called the Stahl correspondence. Because when it says, Satatam kirtiyanto mam yattantascha dridhavrita namashyantascha mam nityam nityu, I believe that's how it goes. He's saying, Prabhupada's saying, kirtan means for Krishna, the glorification of Krishna. Krishna kirtan. And he said, well, that is a well and good, but I think you have kirtan for other deities. Maharaj said, no, kirtan is for Krishna. And Guru Maharaj would say, sankirtan means samyak kirtanam. Full glorification necessarily means Krishna, and by extension, Mahaprabhu, being Sadaishwarya Purna Bhagavan. Anyway, but then the man said, but don't get me wrong, he said, actually, he's the head of the Sanskrit department there. He said, when I see your members chanting Krishna Nam Sankirtan on the campus, and I like it. So I don't want you to think that I don't appreciate that. So he is accumulating some Sukriti. The friends nearby, right around the time we were entering negotiations here, they revealed, they knew him very well, and they said he was so earnest about this, being a Sanskrit school, and that there would be Sanskrit slokas vibrated here. They were worried about who the next owners would be after he passed away in 2012. So when they knew it would be us, they were like happy. They said, oh, that's what he would have wanted. And I said, yes, we will be vibrating Sanskrit. You can rest assured. So Kaviraj Goswami says in Chaitanya Charitamritam that I'm representing this as it is to be represented. It's not like I think, oh, here, like they do the modern day politicians, they poll. And on the basis of the polls, they present some information to the people that they're likely to nod and agree with. Kaviraj Goswami says in the I think it's in the Madhya Lila, chapter 1. He's saying, I'm presenting this as it is to be presented, as I've heard from Srup Damodar, Raghunath Das, via Raghunath Das Goswami, Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami. This is how they represent this. This is how, you know, reality is for itself and by itself. Krishna reveals himself. This is the way Krishna is revealing himself. It's not that he, you know, doesn't get it. Even just think about as you know, his localized aspect of Paramatma is in the heart of every living being. So you would think that gives him like an advantage to polling. The pollsters, you know, they get a group of people in the room and say, what would you think if someone said this? People are like, well, it could be okay. Krishna's in the heart of every living being. So when he gives an example in the Bhagavad Gita, you can rest assured it is a good one. It's an example that the maximum amount of people can catch, understand. Right? So the reason I mention it is Kaviraj Goswami, I mean, this is a quandary for those who are attempting to preach. To what degree do we modify our presentation for any particular audience? At least we need to understand correctly what it is we're representing before we start doing all this modification. Right? We need to understand clearly what it is, become acquainted with that. So Kaviraj Goswami is saying, I'm presenting that here. And he's addressing the complaint someone might have that, well, there's a lot of Sanskrit in there. You know, and he says, well, there's, you know, the Bhagavatam is in Sanskrit. And we have Acharya's commentary. They're also in Sanskrit. He said, so here in Chaitanya Charitamritam, there are a few Sanskrit verses in comparison, and I've put it in the common vernacular, which happens to be, of the day, Bengali, and what's come to be known as, you know, Sadhu Bhasha in time. But anyway, he's saying, I'm presenting it simply. And we hear very often there's a Sanskrit verse, and then Kaviraj Goswami renders it in the Bengali. And Gurudev would say this sometimes, that his Bengali rendering is so beautiful, sometimes that it appears to surpass what was given in Sanskrit. Kaviraj Goswami is so wonderful and respectful of all the others. Like, he also wrote a book called Govinda Lilamritam about Radha and Krishna's path. That's very high. He gives a few slokas from there in Chaitanya Charitamritam. But it'll be after he quotes Rupa Goswami and say, in this connection, Rupa Goswami, and it's one of the high books of Rupa Goswami, a verse. And then right after that, there'll be another verse that you go like, oh, it's similarly themed and very beautiful, and so, oh, it's so wonderful. And then you look and it says, Govinda Lilamritam. He doesn't say, I've written a few myself, but it's there. Because Madan Mohan is moving his hand and making him write and express these things. That's another thing to consider. If you think, what of this presentation? Remember who's moving his hand and presenting these things. My point being, Prabhupada, I was 19, and so were most of the people surrounding me, similarly aged. And he is quoting these Sanskrit verses, praising the Goswamis, Chaktva Turnamashesha Mandalapati Shranim Siddhartha, how they kicked off all aristocracy, Rupa and Sanatana, and they took the kopin, the loincloth. They left high government positions and took the loincloth, sat beneath tree in Vrindavan, writing Lalita Madhava, Vidagda Madhava, Bhakti Rasamrita Sendhu, Ujjvala Nilamani, Brihad Bhagavatamritam, his Sajjan Toshini, the Tika of Srimad Bhagavatam, so many things. You think, why? Korunayaka, out of their mercy they did this, and they made this presentation. And Korunayaka, Gopi Bhava Rasamrita Dilahari Kalola Magno Muhur. And they were like drowning in an ocean of Gopi Bhava, the hearts of the Braja Gopis, the real wealth of all time and everything is what is in the heart of the Braja Gopis primarily, and which is an extension of the supreme Braja Gopi, Srimati Radharani. Anyway, so I mentioned the Guru Maharaj, just thinking back and almost thinking out loud when we were having just sort of some informal conversation, I was saying, like, how could we appreciate that? From a strictly rational point of view, it doesn't make any sense. No background, then a foreign language, so many apparent disqualifiers, but something about the agent, the presentation, the vibration, the purity behind it, that the heart resonated. So I thought, he must have extended the capacity for the appreciation. But Guru Maharaj said, you accumulated enough sukriti to appreciate it. And see, that's different than a rational, intellectual, analytical acceptance that an academic or a scholar might have. They can also read these things. Some of them, not just read them, they make a lifelong study out of it and write books on it, and they're tasteless, if not offensive or misguiding. And you think, this person dedicated, why? Atapi te deva padambuja dvaya prashada leshan ugrihita evahi. Prashada, a little bit of mercy is what is required. When Guru Maharaj was 23 years old, college student, and his teacher, He had this one teacher who was around 70, 80, something, and, you know, had the equivalent of, like, in the Sat Darshan, the six philosophical systems of India, like black belt, you know, master of each. And Guru Maharaj suggested, Guru Maharaj was so pure-hearted and somewhat naive of the world and thing, you know, and this pure-heartedness, he said, why don't you use your vast knowledge and the study Mahaprabhu? He's saying, like, how great could that be? You know all of these things. So apply yourself to the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Dev. That was Guru Maharaj's suggestion to him. And he's saying, with, you know, like knowledge like that and an intellect, how far you could go. And he said, that teacher turned and said, oh, my boy, it is not a question of, you know, knowledge, intellectualism, analysis. He said, you have to have a little mercy. And that's the difference. When Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Gopinathacharya, having their little, tark, vitark, argument, counter-argument about the divinity of Mahaprabhu. Because Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, who, by the way, is Brihaspati, the guru of the demigods, descended, entering Mahaprabhu's pastimes. So he thinks, when he finds Chaitanya Mahaprabhu fainted before the deity of Jagannath, because after Mahaprabhu took sannyas, Guru said, in a childlike mentality of divine ecstasy and consciousness, he began running in search for Sri Krishna, reality of the beautiful. Kahan Krishna, Prananath, Brajendranandan, Kahan, Karun, Kahan, Pan, Brajendranandan. Saying, where is Krishna, the Lord of my heart? He can't contain himself anymore. Mahaprabhu's a gradual expression of Bhakta Bhav to, you know, Gopi Bhav to Radha Bhav. So after taking sannyas, he's concealing to a certain level in Navadvip, but it's like forcibly expressing itself. So when he takes sannyas, he begins running madly towards Vrindavan, except he has no sense of direction, which is interesting in itself, because it's not a direction in the ordinary sense. Right, you say, no, when you, here's where Delhi is here, and that is not Vrindavan proper. And he's circling, actually, and Nityananda Prabhu, and Chandra Shekhar Acharya, and others, they're like trying to help him. And what happens sometimes Mahaprabhu is Nimai Pandit, now Krishna Chaitanya, is separated from them. And they can only find him by they hear this piteous wailing, someone crying for their beloved. And when Mahaprabhu would cry like that, it could melt stone. Right? So, and then they would find him and then travel a little further then. But at one point, He thinks he's going toward Vrindavan. And there's some cow herd boys. They're herding cows. They look like cow herd boys. They have the sticks, everything. And Nityananda Prabhu tells them, if this sannyasi, who's in divine madness, if he comes by here and he's asking you, which is the way to Vrindavan, point this way. And they all agree. And so Nityananda Prabhu waiting there, and then Mahaprabhu comes and he hears, and the coward boy, Mahaprabhu is going, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, and they're going, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, and he's going, oh, I must be so close to Vrindavan, here are the cowherd boys and their cows, which way to go? And they say, they all point, this is the way you should go. And he's moving in that direction and coming upon a river. And he sees Nityananda Prabhu, but does not recognize him totally. Just says, Sripad, address Sanyanyu. Where is the Vrindavan? And Nityananda says, just see, here's the Jamuna River. He says, oh, Jamuna River. Chidanandabano, Satchishan, Brahma Prema Datri. I forget, Drava Gatri. He starts praising Jamuna as being the daughter of the sun and spiritually conscious river and substance, and he's so happy, and he bathes in the Jamuna, and he can't believe his good fortune. Bathing in the Jamuna and Vrindavan, cowherd boys, and soon we can understand Braja Gopi, Radharani, Nanda Yashoda. He can't be happier. And Nityananda had sent Chandrasekhar Acharya ahead. And he said, you tell Advaita Acharya that come with a boat and everything, and we'll take him to Shantipur, to his house, and tell all the devotees to meet in Shantipur. Send word to Navadvip. And so Mahaprabhu comes out of the water. He doesn't have a second change of cloth. And there's Advaita Acharya waiting with dry garments. And Mahaprabhu is saying, oh, Advaita, how did you know I was in Vrindavan? And Advaita Acharya has the greatest response to that. He says, wherever you are is Vrindavan. And how did I know where? Wherever you are, that is Vrindavan. And then he's coming out of his trance, he realizes, oh, Nityananda has cheated me. And then Advaita says, well, technically not. Saying, because the Ganga, eastern side of this river at this particular junction, the eastern side is Ganga, the western side is considered Jamuna, and you bathe on the western side, so. And Mahaprabhu, oh. And he said, and look, you haven't eaten in 3 days. 3 days wandering madly, searching for Krishna. And they take him to Shantipur, and Sita Thakurani Advaita is right. She makes so many wonderful preparations. And Advaita said, just at my house, a palm full of rice you can have. I'm not a wealthy person, but a palm full of rice you can accept at my place. And when they get there, Sita Thakurani, they've made hundreds of preparations. But he's saying, a palm full. You can take a palm full. And they're like, oh, that I can do. He goes there, and they sees there's a metal plate and then two leaf plates, all these preparations. And seeing all this prasadam, Mahaprabhu thinks, get some leaf plates and give us a little something that we can honor. And Advaita Acharya saying, I'll take care of the prasadam distribution. Don't worry. And he takes Nityananda Prabhu and Mahaprabhu by the hand and seats them, and then starts this massive prasadam distribution. Mahaprabhu saying, this is not appropriate for a sannyasi. And saying, if a sannyasi eats like this, how will he control his senses? It's Advaita Acharya says, in Jagannath Puri, you eat 54 times a day, hundreds and thousands of pots. What is this? This is nothing. I know what your capacity is. You know, because he's always trying to conceal his divinity, which later Sri Ramana's Thakur will tease him and say, like, he's saying, it's like the sun trying to hide itself. That's not going to be possible. And they sit, and whatever Mahaprabhu, we're told, he eats half, Advaita fills up the rest. He eats half, fills up the rest, half. And Mahaprabhu was thinking, how can I do this? And Nityananda Prabhu going in the other direction. Nityananda Prabhu was saying, I had hoped after 3 days of fasting to break my fast today. But I see that won't be possible. Like, this is nothing. And they said, look, you're a tirtik, and you go from one tirtha to another, you accept whatever little is there, just be satisfied with that, and don't make a mess while you're there at it. And Nityananda Prabhu was saying, no, this is not acceptable. And they're having this joking fight, apparently, and Advaita saying, your varnashramic status is unknown. You're an avadut. You're outside of varnashram, and who knows what your position is. That appears to be some criticism, but what he's saying is, you're divine, you're beyond varnashram, you're beyond everything. Who can understand the position of Nityananda Prabhu? Anyway, Nityananda complaining, Advaita saying, I can understand that while you should just be visiting holy places and living a very simple life, what you're really doing is you're going around giving brahmanas trouble, people like me. Anyway, then Nityananda Prabhu takes up some rice and saying, I haven't eaten the slightest of what you got, and he throws the rice like that. And then, which remember, Advaita Acharya said not to do. He throws the rice and some hits Advaita and he starts dancing. And anyway, they go on with their pastimes. And after resting, they begin Nam Sankirtan. Mahaprabhu is dancing madly, Uddanda Nritya, where he leaps, like jumping up in the air very high, coming down again. And Advaita Acharya starts singing a song that's really in the voice of Radharani, saying, today my home is perfect, Madhava has come to my house. Meaning Krishna, after so much separation, he has come to my house today. And he's singing, and then Mukunda singing for the pleasure of Mahaprabhu. It becomes so intense that actually they have to stop. But anyway, after that, Mahaprabhu was saying, I tried to go to Vrindavan, and Sachi Mata comes, and only she can cook for Nimai Pandit for so many days, and it's very moving that it's heartbreaking for her. She sees her son, now all his head is shaved, his hair was so beautiful as Nimai Pandit, now his head is shaved. Still, he looks very beautiful, but some pain in their heart to see him that way. And she's thinking that she won't be able to live in separation. She's saying, like, Viswarup, his brother, had taken sannyas and she never saw him again. And she said, are you going to do that to me now? I'll die. And Mahaprabhu says to her, actually, this body belongs to you. You have given me everything. I can never not revere you or disobey you. So you decide. And Mother Zazi saying that I would prefer that he stay with me. But then people will blame him. They'll find fault with him. He's taken sannyas. He's living with his mother, relatives. And she's saying, but if you go to Jagannath Puri, then devotees are always coming, going, Jagannath Puri, Navadip, Navadip, Jagannath Puri, I'll get some news. Sometimes you'll come to Navadip to bathe in the Ganga. That will satisfy me. And Mahaprabhu tells his devotees, actually, I tried to go to Vrindavan, but the pull of your hearts, I need your order to go. I tried to go without your permission, and the pull of your hearts kept me in orbit. But now I'm asking, please give me your permission. Only then can I go, but via Jagannath Puri. So he goes to Jagannath Puri first, and there he sees the Lord of his heart. When he sees Jagannath, he sings Shyamasundar Krishna. Right? And we know tears like the Ganga are shooting out of his eyes. So Guru Maharaj said, what is that seeing? He said, for us, we see Jagannath, he said, an awkward figure. Krishna, transformed by the, it's an ecstatic transformation as a consequence of feeling intense separation from Vrindavan, that he's assumed the form of Jagannath. But when Mahaprabhu, this Radha Bhava Duti Subalita, enveloped in the heart and halo of Radharani, sees Jagannath, he's seeing Krishna. Shyamasundar Krishna. Remember, he ran from the sannyas ceremony in search for Krishna. So then fainting. Hare Krishna. So he's fainted, and the guards, they're thinking he's some sentimental person. So they're going to pick him up, drag him out of the temple, throw him in the gutter, like they do. But Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he's the court pandit of King Prataparudra Maharaj. He says, wait a minute. And he's observing Mahaprabhu and thinking he appears to be exhibiting what is called Asta Sattvika Vikar, 8 different types of ecstasy appearing simultaneously to an infinite degree. And he's saying, I've read about this. I'm familiar with this from the scripture, never seen it in person, but I can recognize the symptoms. So some devotees come, they carry Mahaprabhu to his house. And it said it looked like when ants carry some big thing, you know, little army of ants, they like, they carry Mahaprabhu to his house. And there, because he's used the cotton swab to establish that he's still alive, because we're told the 10th stage of separation is death. Right? Why do they, although they feel like they want to die in separation from Krishna, why do they not die? It'll be the cause of unhappiness for Krishna. So at his house, Mahaprabhu is in this divine trance for 9 hours. appearing lifeless. It means unconscious to this world, but deeply conscious in the upper world. Not fainted in the ordinary sense. Just all external awareness and kind of suspended on account of being eclipsed by internal awareness. And he's seeing the pastimes of Radha and Krishna and Braja Gopis. But while in that state for 9 hours, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he thinks Mahaprabhu is a highly advanced devotee, like a Siddha Mahatma, a Mahapurush. And Gopinathacharya comes and they have a discussion. And Gopinathacharya is telling Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, don't you understand who is before you? Swayam Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the original. And Sarvabhauma starts quoting this, well, in the Kali Yuga, there's, you know, he's known as Tri Yuga, there's no Leela Avatar. And so a few verses, not many, between Gopinathacharya and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Gopinath said, no, if you'd looked more scrutinizingly, you'd see the reference from 7th canto, Prahlad Maharaj, 11th canto, Vishnu Sahasranam, other places. He's saying, but what is the necessity for this argument? He's saying, Atapite deva padambuja dvaya prashadale shanugrihita evahi. You have to have a little bit mercy, otherwise you won't appreciate this. And Sarvabhauma said, and what's the evidence that, like, you've got that little bit of mercy and I don't? And Gopinath said, because I recognize who he is. I can understand, you know, Atma Prajnanamayo, he's self-illuminating, self-evident. And you can't see that or appreciate that. But then what happens is, as we told recently, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya tries to upgrade Mahaprabhu's sannyas by explaining Vedanta. Mahaprabhu upgrades him in the process. Sarvabhauma received the mercy of the devotees. Then he's appreciating Mahaprabhu. So when Mahaprabhu told the devotees, you can come for 4 months every year for the Rath Yatra festival, everyone can come from Navadvip. And every year, Shivananda Sen brings 200 Mahabhagavatas from Navadvip. And Prataparudra Maharaj, Gopinathacharya, Sarvabhaumacharya, they're on a rooftop and they're seeing all of the devotees coming and they see Mahaprabhu and his party greeting them. And Prataparudra Maharaj wants to know who they are. Sarvabhauma said, Gopinathacharya is in a better position to point them out. And so he said, oh, look, there's Nityananda and Advaita, and see how they're being garlanded. And he starts naming all these great devotees. And at one point, Prataparudra Maharaj says, remember, in the presence of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, who's now been upgraded, he said, why is it that some people can appreciate Mahaprabhu's divinities and other people cannot? And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya says, Atapi de deva padambuja dvaya prashadale shanugrihita evahi. He said, you have to get a little bit of mercy. It's the same thing that scholar told Guru Maharaj. It's in the Gita, it's everywhere. Krishna Varnam Tusha Krishnam Sango Pangashta Varshanam Yagye Sankirtana Pray Yajantihi Sumedasa. Or I said, those with Sumedasa means refined theistic intellect. And otherwise, he described them as Sukritivan. They possess sufficient Sukriti for there to be some appreciation. Any other question? Or what was part two of that? Or you decide.
I will speak it out. You will decide whether it needs to be answered or not.
Yeah.
Just a moment.
Once in Vrindavan, Gurudev was like reading the paper and he turned his head. He said, if Krishna doesn't want to reveal himself to someone, why should I? And he like went back to reading it. It was a rhetorical question, but I thought, well, what if he, you know, if I had to answer that? Because I understood what he meant too, lest it should not be misunderstood. It's like, because then they go, well, then why do we preach? Because Krishna does want to reveal himself, but there may be instances where he is concealing his position. So, but I thought, if I had to answer him, I would say, because you're more merciful than Krishna. But that verse, it says, no diksham natcha satkriyam purushcharjam managikshate mantro yam rasanas pragyeva palati shri krishna namatmaka. And for the holy name to descend, to appear, that is his own will. No diksha, no cha satkriyam, no purushchar, no prerequisites, no nothing. It's all dependent upon Krishna's desire to express himself. That Krishna wants to reveal himself. And it may appear through different agents. As we told recently, it may exceed the capacity, what Krishna is revealing through an agent may exceed the capacity of the agent. Gifting that person, blessing them, revealing himself to them. That's also possible.
What shall one do when he or she realizes that is drowning into the tamagun, but at the same time that one is lacking the desire to resist that?
God helps those that help themselves. That said, like Guru Maharaj gave an example, people suffering from respiratory condition. So there's different type of medicine you can take for that. And there's also, what would you call, not misbehavior, but, you know, I forget the word. But the misbehavior that may contribute. But so sometimes the cure is not taking effect. So that person is told to move to an environment where just by living there and breathing there, it's curing you. Your health is improving. Like in America, Arizona would be a place like that. It's very dry, and so people suffering from certain respiratory conditions are told, go live in that part of the country. Just living there will be good for you. So there's the dham. Then there are the ashrams, which are like, you know, dham embassies. So when we're unable, we're being overwhelmed by mundane association, we need to situate ourselves in the midst of good association, and the good association will uplift us. We just stay within the shelter of the association of the devotees. Speaking of Ratiyatra, one year, one of our Venezuelan devotees was, you know, like, people are like this, it's so tight, and then with all the kirtan and the movement and the dancing and everything, he got, like, shifted to another party. And he was explaining to me how he couldn't extricate himself from that party. Wherever they all went, he went. Because, you know, they're like moving as a group. So it's something like that. Even against, if we surround ourselves with good association, we'll be carried along. Sometimes maybe even, you know, against our will. But we'll be carried along until we become a willful participant for our own betterment. So generally speaking, the cure is always association and superior association, sadhu sangha satovare. But God helps those that help themselves. There has to be something from our side. Can't say, I will continue to do wrong and then be saved by the devotees. That may be true, but one should not abuse that. But really, good association, superior association, that's uplifting. Anything else?
Why the more the jivas become fallen, the more merciful the Lord becomes. And also how this fits the phrase, no service, no mercy.
Where does that come from?
Acharya Maharaj.
But where does it come from? Where does it originate? Anyway, be that as it may, what was the original question?
Why the more the jivas become fallen,
the Lord becomes merciful.
The Lord becomes no service, no mercy. How this fits the phrase?
It's a local question, I mean, from group to group.
Means, continuing with what I just said, is you have to offer yourself. You cannot think that this means that one should become more fallen because the Lord will become more merciful. That's not the point. What it is a reference to Sri Chaitanya Dev, Sri Chaitanya Avatar. Rupa Goswami says, Namo Mahavananaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gaurtusei Namah. The Guru said, how should we conceive Sri Chaitanya Avatar? The most magnanimous, the most merciful. Because someone was astonished after Guru Maharaj gave a presentation about Mahaprabhu and just shaking his head saying, like, it doesn't seem warranted. These fallen souls, they're being given all this mercy by Mahaprabhu. And Guru Maharaj said, what should he do? Distribute stone chips. Is that what he should do? Like, come around, give everybody some stone chips. He's saying, no, if he is the most merciful, then what he conceives not to be a good thing or a very good thing, but what he conceives to be higher and nothing higher than that, the highest thing, that he wants to distribute, make it accessible to those in the lowest position. That shows the range of the greatest magnanimity. That the highest thing, of which there's nothing higher, what is that? Radha Bhav, Mahabhav of Radharani, the highest type of Krishna Prem. Jadi gorna hoita, tabike hoita, kamani daritam dehe, radhar mahima prema rasasimo jagata janatake. So Mahaprabhu's come to he's experiencing this, the heart of Srimati Radharani, that type of Krishna. He wants everyone else to have that opportunity also. So sometimes we hear the expression, cause this mercy, because the mercy means it is undeserved. If it were deserved, it would not be mercy. As Gurmukh says, mercy is above justice. Justice means do this, you get that. What, good or bad. You do this particular activity, then you're going to get the result from that, good or bad. That's the plane of justice. Right? And as Shakespeare said, Merchant of Venice, Portia, saying, the quality of mercy is not strained, it droppeth like the gentle rain from heaven. And it's twice blessed, that the person who receives and also who's giving. And he says, the scepter of the king, you know, we always see the kings, they're holding a scepter, saying, the scepter represents temporal power and the ability, capacity, authority to punish. Like the danda, kings, they always have a scepter. That's what it represents. It's, you know, it's almost like a Vishnu symbol, club. It's showing temporal power and the ability to enforce, to punish. Saying, but when a king's decision is infused with mercy, at that moment, a king is like God, because mercy comes from God. Mercy is godly. The king making decisions infused with mercy has become godly. And so, the conclusion, and she says further, it sounds like Guru Maharaj wrote it, this section of The Merchant of Venice. It's like word for word, practically, things that he has said. And just one other noteworthy one, she says, and if it were not for mercy, then what hope is there for any of us? So Guru Maharaj would say, don't approach the Department of Justice. You're going to find something waiting for you there. That's not going to make you happy. Because right? What we've done in our sojourn in the material world, we can't estimate. It's not enough that you're saying, like, you have your recent life together, if that much. One before, we can't properly estimate these things. Some woman wrote a book, Why Do Bad Things Happen to Good People? I didn't read the book. But I know that there's a one-word answer to this question, karma. That's why bad things happen to good people. They didn't do anything observable in this life to warrant this kind of a reaction, so it points to past life. So Gurmukh says, do not approach the Department of Justice. Go to the Department of Mercy and you'll find something waiting for you there. That's where you want to go. But, Gurudev, they'd call Gurudev on the phone and say, oh, Maharaj, please give me your mercy. And he said, yes, Prabhu, Guru Maharaj, Krishna bless you, Guru Maharaj bless you. But then the same person called like a week later And Guru, yes, and he goes, Gurudev, please give me your mercy. And he goes, what happened to the mercy I gave you last week? So maybe there is the no service, no, you know. It's one thing, you know, so this merciful opportunity is being given. It doesn't mean you sit there and just are bathed in a shower of mercy and you do nothing, right? The appropriate response is seva, service. Right? And to those who are faithful servants, the Lord and his devotees are continually merciful. Hare Krishna. Mainly, it means that whatever position, you know, stani stita shrutigatam dhanavan, whatever position they're in, they're making their approach. When Rupa and Sanatan approach Mahaprabhu, it is breaking Mahaprabhu's heart, their humility. They put a straw between their teeth, they're giving shastanga dandavat, saying, we're so, it's almost like the first question, saying, we're so fallen and we're ashamed to even say what our position is and the sinful activities we committed, what to speak of giving them up. That's how Rupa and Sanatan Goswami represent themselves to Mahaprabhu. And then Mahaprabhu is saying, you're breaking my heart, this kind of thing coming from the two of you. You know, you're my eternal servitors. Your Rupa and Sanatan, and, you know, and that's an important meeting, preliminary meeting. And Ram Kaili, he sends them back to the government seva, saying now is not the right time, because the para vyasinini nari sloka, saying like the wife with the paramour, be attentive to your duties, but in your heart you'll join me soon. But, so they're presenting themselves as being fallen, but then Mahaprabhu is giving them this seva. All the bhakti shastras, bhakti siddhanta, bhakti rasa shastra, etc., excavating the holy places, establishing deities, all this seva that comes as a consequence of this merciful opportunity. But certainly the devotees are creating this good fortune. Hare Krishna.